This is Suno India Production. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.
In the Union Budget 2023, 6 crore rupees was allocated to the SMILE program of the Ministry of Social Justice and Equality. It is under this program that the government works for the transgender community in our country. The most well-known initiative under the SMILE program is perhaps Garima Griha, with 12 shelter homes in 9 states. The program also offers scholarship and training programs for trans people. There are other notable steps the government has been taking for the community in recent years. The Ayushman Bharat TG Plus health insurance scheme announced in 2022 is available for trans people and includes hormone replacement therapy and gender affirmation surgeries. But this is where the schemes for trans people seem to end. Recently, the government said that there are no plans to bring in reservation quotas for the trans community, even though that was a direction of the 2014 NALSA judgment. So for educational and professional upliftment, the community must rely on the efforts of the Ministry of Social Justice and Equality alone. And even in that case, its flagship program, the Garima Griha shelter homes, have not received funding for about a year. The question is whether 6 crore rupees this year will be enough to improve the conditions of one of the most marginalized and oppressed sections of our society. Hello, this is Surya Tapa Mukherjee, your host for this episode of Pride and Prejudice. For this episode, I'm speaking to Obhinobo, a public policy researcher, about the union budget and the efforts of the government for the trans community so far.
So my name is Abhinava. I'm known as Avi by my friends, my co-workers. I'm basically a public policy researcher with a focus on economic empowerment of transgender and other gender and sexual minority communities in India and in South Asia at the same time. I'm currently associated with the National Institute of Rural Development and Panchayat Raj, which is an autonomous policy think tank working under the Ministry of Rural Development of the Government of India. I'm currently working on one of their projects, one of the flagship projects. For the first time, they have taken up this flagship project, which is to draft policy and develop a program towards the wage employment generation for transgender individuals, especially those who are homeless, school dropout, underskilled, and are resorted to begging and sex work. Yeah, so this is what I do.
So the gender budget allocation this year is 2.23 lakh crore rupees. And from that 6 crore rupees, which is 0.002% of the gender budget, yeah, is allocated to the SMILE, which is Support for Marginalized Individuals, yeah, for Livelihood and Enterprise Program, yeah, under the Ministry of Social Justice and, yeah, Empowerment. So what is your first impression of this budget that has been allocated?
No, my first impression was that it has worsened over the period of time, because I remember in 2021 or 2022, the total amount which was given to the Ministry of Social Justice and Empowerment, the MOSJE, which are responsible to also work, directly work with the transgender communities. By the way, I don't recall the year, but then it was in 2021 or 2022, the total amount which was allocated to the MOSJE was around 12,000 crore, and then within that amount, only 5 crore was spent for the transgender individual, especially the SMILE project, yeah, you know, like the Garima Griha and the other scholarship programs, etc. So that was kind of like 0.04%. So I remember working on a piece saying that, okay, that the, every 100 Indian rupees that the government of India is spending, only 4 paisa actually is going to, you know, like the trans population's empowerment, you know, like and upliftment. Now it's like you say 0.002%, right? So it's like in every 1,000 rupees Indian government is spending, only 2 paisa is coming to the upliftment or the sustainable development of the transgender populations in India. So which, you know, like which also is showing that the priority has been worsened over the period of time, right? So so that's my first priority. I mean, like, you know, like the, it has become worse, only worse, yeah.
Right. So that's really interesting because overall, it from the outside, it kind of seems in general that the government is kind of increasing the attention that it pays to the transgender community. But firstly, like, can you tell me a bit about what is the SMILE program? Because, you know, like, if you look into it, it doesn't just say transgender people. It says transgender people and people who are involved in begging.
Yeah.
And if you, like, in the gender budget statement, if you actually look up the word transgender is not there anywhere. Where the SMILE allocation is there, under that, also it kind of mentions people involved in begging. It does not really mention transgender people.
Yeah.
So can you tell me, like, when this budget allocation happens, like, do you know, like, how do they decide how much is going to go for transgender people or, like, you know, this other section of people who are begging for their livelihood? How does that work? Do you know?
See, the problem with any scheme such as SMILE, I mean, like, name it like a SMILE, any scheme, the problem is that when the ministry or when the particular ministry actually is trying to draft the particular scheme or develop a particular scheme, they normally do not do much research on what are the needs of the community at this point of time, right? So the similar thing happened also with the SMILE scheme. So the ministry was much more, you know, like interested in quote-unquote rehabilitation project. I mean, like, where they wanted to work with the population who are involved in begging, sex, not sex work, but then begging and then other traditional professions such as like badhai and, you know, like launder dance, etc. And most of them are, of course, homeless. Most of them, of course, needed some kind of assistance to find, you know, like a secure and safe space to, or a shelter to also, you know, like start their life with mainstream professions at the same time. But I don't think that the SMILE project talked about anything beyond the quote-unquote rehabilitation program, because under the SMILE scheme, the Garima Griha also came. I mean, like, across India, there are like multiple Garima Grihas. But then I don't think that the government or the ministry, while defining or while developing the scheme, they thought anything beyond the rehabilitation program and talk actually about wage employment, actually about the livelihood. And then I'm not too sure whether, I mean, that would be a right analysis at this point of time. But then looking at the government's priority, I think any government, I mean, like, be it the union government at this point of time in India, or be it any state government, say the government of West Bengal, they would like to get rid of people who are begging on the street, right? So that's exactly why there are like separate scheme for people who are begging on the street, people who are into begging, etc. And then since transgender and then the quote-unquote hijra population come with that particular, come under the begging, so they would also like to, you know, like, include them while talking about begging. Because if they just say that, okay, we wanted to work on the beggars, but then they don't identify or acknowledge that trans people are into begging, then the scheme would, the objective of the scheme would actually fail, right? So I think that was more of that than directly working with the trans population. Yes, a certain section within the ministry, I mean, like, for example, we have no NISD, which works directly with the ministry at this point of time. There are individuals, there are officials at this point of time who are super sensitized towards the needs of trans population. But then when the scheme was actually primarily drafted, that was probably in the year of 2020, 2019, I think they didn't think much beyond rehabilitation program, right? Yeah. So that's what happened at this point.
Yeah, so when you're saying rehabilitation program, like, I just want to clarify, you know, like, because of my curiosity, is when you say that they're thinking about rehabilitation but not exactly employment,
yeah,
what does that mean? Because, like, how can you get rehabilitated if employment is not a part of that?
I think that talking about livelihood and wage employment, that needs a lot of more research, that needs a lot of more introspection, what we can do. We need to understand the ground reality. For example, there are multiple schemes, Before Smile, different government, including the government of West Bengal, they tried their level best to also, quote-unquote, rehabilitate the trans individuals, right? For example, the government of West Bengal once declared that they would be also hiring trans individuals as a civic volunteer, the civic traffic police or whatever. Some of them also have this small program where they, they provide them with the swing machine to work on that. But I don't think these are the real aspirations of trans individuals, right? So when you're talking about trans individuals, rehabilitation program or employment or livelihood, you need to think beyond, or you need to think zara hatke from the women empowerment, right? But then the point is very simple, that when you're talking about the women empowerment, when you're talking about the women-led self-help groups, which actually work really well in the rural parts of India, there are multiple examples of that, women-led self-help groups, cooperative bodies, which are functioning fantastically, across India. But then we also have to acknowledge that the earning that the women making from this self-help group, from this work, are not the primary earning of the family member, right? India is still a patriarchal society. India still, most of the families are still living, they don't really expect the women of the house to earn money, right? That's not, even if the women of the house are earning more than the men of the house. So we have to understand that there's a fundamental difference between the women self-help group and then the scheme that should be developed for the trans individuals. You possibly cannot just replicate the model which have been there, functioning fantastically for women. You cannot possibly replicate them for the trans individuals. You need to think zara hatke. You need to understand their aspirations in life. What are the skills they already have? That should be a starting point. That's what I feel, right? So I think that the most of the government made the mistake regarding that, and I'm glad that I'm part of this NIRD PR project, where we're actually looking into the aspirations of trans individuals and what are the actual needs of trans person, and then based on the needs, based on the lived realities of the trans individual, then accordingly the programs shall be developed, the scheme shall be also developed, right? Those trans individuals who are living, who are part of the Garima Griha, they're actually been provided with training programs in different sort of training programs at the same time, that has been happening. But then we have to also understand, we have to also analyze the retention rate. Some individuals might say that, look, people are actually finding jobs, right, in the corporate, in the private sector at the same time. But then what are the retention rate? That is something we need to also understand. In West Bengal, there were two transgender nurses, couple of years ago. There were a lot of media coverage around two trans individuals being appointed as nurses in one or two of the private medical, private medical facility in the city, right? But then have they been able to retain their job? That is something we also need to ask. And then just because there is some corporate guys are, saying, okay, yeah, if you train them with the nursing courses, I'll be able to hire them, blah, blah, blah. Are we also understanding whether trans people, those who have been hired as the nurse, have been given training as nurses, are they actually wanting to become a nurse? This is something we need to also ask, I feel, right? Trans people can be also part of the Manrega scheme in the rural parts of India, which has been happening, right? Manrega is one of the biggest rural employment generation schemes, and those who are part of the rural parts of India, why can't they also work there, to generate some sort of wage employment, right? So when I'm talking about rehabilitation program plus livelihood, then I think we also need to understand first that what are the real ground realities, what are the problems. Can a trans person, so for example, you can start giving them swing machine, right? But then how many trans people also have this financial capital to, you know, like invest and to start a tailoring business? And then even if they start a tailoring business, how many people would be coming to her, or how many people would be coming to them to, you know, like to do some sort of work, right? Also, the women, I mean, like women in a particular locality, since that is not their primary source of income, they can afford to make the price really low, right? But then can a trans person who is the primary earning member of a life, and I know since I've been working with them, after trans person starts working, they also have to pay to the family members to, you know, like to quote-unquote buy acceptance from the family, right? Because they have been devoid of acceptance, family love, and then since they have been devoid of that, they aspire to be loved, they aspire to be accepted, right? And then in most of the cases, once they start earning money, the family immediately start accepting them, right? So they have to also pay to their family members to quote-unquote buy acceptance, to buy love, right? So they cannot afford to just do sewing machine wala work, right? So are we giving them enough capital? Are we giving them enough resources that they can transfer, they can turn this whatever training they have been given into livelihood? I think the answer is no, right? So yeah, so that's my answer.
I think, yeah, like that's a really interesting point that, you know, like as marginalized as cis women are, it's like for a trans person, it's like, you know, of course, like you said that when you start working, they're also like supporting their family. Maybe their family like does not accept them,
yeah,
and maybe kicked them out of their house, you know, and now this trans person is scrambling to like earn a livelihood so they can like support themselves, and still like they will send money back home. And yeah, but it's like, you know, if you don't have a job or you don't earn enough, then it's like, you know, suddenly it's like you lose a place to live, you lose, you know, you have food scarcity, like things can get really bad really fast, like when you do not have this family or this community that's constantly around you and will help sustain you as a person. So I think that's a really interesting point. But I'm also curious, because you said that, you know, it's important to see what are the needs of the community before kind of deciding these schemes. Like before this budget, for example, you know, was there any conversation with the community? Do you know, like, is it decided through like any sort of investigation or at least conversations? Or is it just based on, I don't know, like, figures and however the performance was the previous year and things like that?
Talking about the needs of the community, at the same time, there's also one more interesting point that I have to also make at this point of time, right? So I think that the government or whoever is making schemes, whoever is trying to help trans individual at the same, I mean, like to earn a livelihood, to a sustainable livelihood, they have to also bring this point into consideration that a trans person who are into begging and sex work, they earn a lot of money at this point of time, right? So, and then you're talking about, you know, like sometimes we use the dignity card, okay, you know, like since that's a very undignified profession and that's not a very respectable profession, so, you know, like let us not do that, right? But then in 2023, dignity can be also bought. I mean, like if you have money, you have dignity. As simple as that, right? So people in the society who have money, they have more dignity, they have more respect, quote unquote, right? So you possibly also cannot bring this dignity card and then this respect card, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, like tell them, can I ask, say, you have to be in the mainstream profession, you have to be a school teacher or a sewing, you know, or a tailor or a sweeper or a civic volunteer to earn more respect. They would simply say, no, because we are earning more in begging and sex work, right? So that is also one of the interesting factor one has to also bring in, that, you know, like, can, have we been able to make, because the hijra profession, the hijra culture, it's a system altogether. It's an alternative family system. Even if you're not earning money in the hijra profession, in the hijra culture, you are still accepted as transgender. That's the core identity of a transgender person, because they have been their rights have been violated because they are transgender, right? So whoever accept that without any question, whoever accepted without any inhibition, they are drawn towards that, right? At the same time, hijra profession, hijra culture, although there are certain cases of violence and exploitations are there, but then largely hijra profession and hijra culture, they have been able to provide safe shelter and food to trans person who are homeless, right? And who have nowhere to go, right? And so have we been able to, have the government been able to, or has the civil society been able to make any such alternative system, family model? The answer is no. As of now, there is no commune. There is no commune model which can talk about shelter, food, livelihood, acceptance, sharing resources, and living with dignity, quote unquote, or living without the fear of being evicted or being violated. There is no such system has been developed at this point of time, right? So why would a trans person why would they leave their traditional, livelihood opportunities that they have, right? And then, so that is the ground reality that the government must understand, and they should be working accordingly. It's not just the government, it's also the NGOs, it's also the civil societies, it's also the corporates, whoever is trying to become LGBTQ friendly. And they have all this good intention, I understand that. But then it's not that simple, because we're talking about adults here. We're talking about grown up adults who can take their own calls, who have the agency over their identity, over their body, over their needs and aspirations, right? So why would they simply just, leave the profession wherever they are at this point of time? There are pockets, we can talk about trans individuals, trans masculine individuals at the same time, blah, blah. But then largely these schemes are failing because the government has, or the civil society, or even us, the activists, or even the NGOs, or even the corporates, they don't understand the needs of the trans people. There is no community consultation happened on the issue of livelihood. There is no concrete data. We don't even know how many trans people are living in West Bengal, or how many trans people are living in, say, in the state of Andhra Pradesh, right? There's no data with us. There is no comprehensive livelihood mapping. When you're talking about creating livelihood or rehabilitation of slum dwellers, there's a concrete data that, there are livelihood mapping study which has happened, which has talked about the asset one individual have. For example, there's a biggest development project happening in Dharavi in Mumbai, right? That project is taking shape because they have done an extensive livelihood mapping study of the slum dwellers at Dharavi. In Ahmedabad, in Gandhinagar, at the same time, there has been a very interesting livelihood mapping study with those who are living in the slums. And then as per the data, as per the need of the community, the government may or may not, define their strategy. But then at this point of time, there has not been any comprehensive research on the livelihood, their asset, their socioeconomic understanding, migration pattern. How many trans people actually migrate from West Bengal to Bihar for laundry dancing? And what are the kind of situation that they are into in Bihar? They complain about the exploitation that happens in Bihar for laundry dancing, but they still go, right? So we also need to understand why they go, what can we do to stop the exploitation? Can we think of something else? But then that can only happen when you have a comprehensive data, a database of trans peoples and their assets, their socioeconomic condition, their whether they migrate or not, their aspiration, their existing skills, etc., etc., right? But that has not happened as of now. So I don't think that, before that, without doing that, anything can happen at this point.
There also, some people also bring up this interesting point that the budget allocation for trans people happens under, the Ministry of Social Justice and Empowerment. But what about budget in other ministries, because obviously for trans people, the struggles are across a range of you know, things like education, healthcare, employment, housing, violence and discrimination mitigation, political representation. So what do you think of this conversation that there needs to be this multi-pronged approach, like across ministries, tackling sort of how they experience discrimination in all areas of life?
Yeah, no, I think that's a very valid and interesting question at this point of time. My understanding tells me, and my own work with the government tells me, that government has finally come to a mind that there has to be extensive amount of work for transgender individuals' empowerment. That is there. And then there are government officials, there are ministers, there are IAS officers, there are IPS officers, others who are extremely sensitive and sensitized towards these issues, right? But then at the same time, it's a problem that has been happening for decades, right? And then I personally think that it would take some more time to, you know, like work on that. And then, yes, you are right. And I personally feel that it's not just about the Ministry of Social Justice and Empowerment. It's about every ministry working under the government of India, or every department under the government of any state government at this point of time. They should be bringing this component into their policy draft or policy framework. However, that hasn't happened yet. And Ministry of Rural Development with the NIRDPR, they have just started the process for the Rural Development Ministry. And I'm hoping that that would actually change the way we look at livelihood for trans individuals, those who are from the rural spaces, right? And I also feel that that's sometimes being an activist, being a trans and queer rights activist, I also feel that sometimes it is also our fault that we have chosen not to work with the government. Most of the NGOs working with the LGBTQ rights movement at this point of time, or LGBTQ individuals, they somehow do not work with the government. They are very afraid of working with the government. But I personally think that it's time for us to rigorously work with the government. We have, of course, our own reason, because, you know, like we were treated as like criminal until 2018, right? It's just 5 years. And then in 5 years, also a lot of changes happen. Now, at least you can see two individuals coming to Shark Tank and then talking about, I mean, like pitching their business idea. They may or may not win. That's a separate question altogether. But then this amazing transformation that is happening, that a trans population, which were treated as illegal, criminal, or not even part of Indian citizen even a decade ago, they are now coming up with business ideas and pitching it, you know, like in a public platform where a lot of startup, you know, like entrepreneurs, they are actually pitching their ideas. So this transformation, of course, happened because there is a policy level change. The government started looking at the government of India, the government of West Bengal, every government. They have started looking at a trans population with a more empathetic, through a more empathetic lens. And there is a genuine willingness to work on the empowerment of trans and trans individual. So I think with rigorous policy advocacy with the government, right policy advocacy, of course, not the wrong policy advocacy, with rigorous right policy advocacy with the government, working, I mean, like talking about and then doing policy research, talking about data, getting data, okay, how many trans people are living with the marginalized poverty. You'd be surprised to know that there are so many people living without any single bank account. So even if the government has this right policy framework towards, you know, like towards developing and empowering a certain marginalized section, but then these days the government sends all the subsidy to the bank account directly, right? So if you do not have bank account, even if the government wants to send you the subsidies, subsidized money to your bank account so that you can actually work in your life, how they would do that, right? So it's also up to us how we can use or utilize several government policy. And then the government really doesn't need to have transgender specific, exclusive to transgender individuals policy. There are several schemes which can be accessed or which can be accessed by several individuals. For example, this Shastra Sati card in West Bengal. Can we do a right advocacy with the government of West Bengal so that trans people and queer people who are male-bodied queer individuals and trans people can be included in the scheme? It's a scheme for all, right? The government is saying that this is an universal healthcare. So we are part of society, we are part of the universal healthcare system. Can we also do the right advocacy with the government so that they can include us, the trans and queer population, into this scheme, right? We don't need a transgender-specific scheme at this point of time, or there might be needed, but then not in everything. For example, MNREGA, can we also include trans population into the scheme of MNREGA, right? So that will happen eventually. I can see that will happen. It will take certain amount of time because, you know, like in India, we have our different priorities, you know, like, so so this will happen, but has started in some areas, but then the government has the right intention.
Right. So one of the most, I think, highlighted programs under the SMILE scheme is that of Garima Griha. And the last time that I spoke to people operating this Garima Grihas, like, they, you know, the funding and payments were pending for like several months. They're kind of close to closure, you know, things were kind of tense. Like, you I'm guessing you obviously working on the ground, you would sort of know more about how much, like, after the budget is allocated, like, how much of this, why are there like such funding issues, you know, like, is it just the, you know, government bureaucratic stuff that this is just the way things are, this is just what happens? Or is there some additional, you would say, maybe negligence or like problems in implementation because this is a marginalized population that was never kind of thought about before?
I think the answer would be the first one. That is that's bureaucracy. Government of India, I have been also working with them. And then, yeah, I mean, like, they are slow in processing because they have an predefined bureaucratic process, right? So I think it's bureaucratic process. By the way, with the Minister of Rural Development, we are also trying to study the success or the difficulties in running Garima Griha. And then we shall be also able to understand. So I would be forming my understanding, my opinion only after that. At this point of time, I think it's the bureaucratic process, but my feeling is also tells me that there might be, the government might be also very, very careful and conscious about how the fund is being utilized. And
right. I mean, there are security issues as well. And of course, like, you know, bureaucracy is bureaucracy. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, you are literally, it's a population that literally, it's like people will not get to eat. Or like, you know, it's like these Garima Grihas are also paying rent. Yes. Like, it just makes everything extremely difficult, and then people start paying out of their own pocket, and it's not like they are very rich. Yeah. So
there are like multiple crowdfunding happened in India just to run Garima Griha. I have donated to two of them. I know, because the funding crunch, and so people just didn't have money to pay rent, you know, like feed those who are already there in the Garima Griha, right? Yeah, so you have to like feed people at the same time, right? So there have been like multiple crowdfunding just to run Garima Griha.
I got in touch with Garima Grihas in Delhi and in Kolkata to check on the status of the funding. Rudrani Chhetri, who runs the Garima Griha associated with Mitra Trust in Delhi, confirmed over text that they haven't gotten funding for a year and there has been no direction from the government either. Ranjita Sinha, who runs the Gokhale Road Bandhan Garima Griha in Kolkata, described over an emotional phone call how the project that started with hope and ambition has become a burden that's pushing her to the edge. Trans people with precarious livelihoods who began working with the program for a stable income have left after having to work with no pay. The young trans tenants who came to the shelter home for security have begun to leave as even food has become a worry. Ranjita is accumulating debt with high interest rates, and now she's doing all the work at the shelter by herself. So a program that was started for the community's upliftment is actually exacerbating their poverty and desperation.
ये एक साल जो हमें करना पड़ा, जितना मेरे पास मेरा फैमिली के थोड़ा सा गहना, थोड़ा सा वैल्यूएबल जो था, उसको हमें दुकान में रखकर हाई इंटरेस्ट में हमें पैसा लेना पड़ा, 10-12% इंटरेस्ट, ठीक है, लाखों पैसे। क्योंकि यदि एक महीना में आप इलेक्ट्रिक बिल नहीं दोगे, आप घर का रेमुनरेशन नहीं दोगे, टेनेंट एक्ट के अनुसार भी वो मुश्किल होगा, क्योंकि वी आर अ टेनेंट, लैंडलॉर्ड आपको क्यों रखेगा 11 महीना। और उसके साथ साथ जितना स्टाफ है हमारे प्रोजेक्ट में, वो सब स्टाफ डिमोटिवेटेड हो जा रहे हैं, बेसिकली दे आर फ्रॉम कम्युनिटी। एक महीना एक इंसान को यदि नौकरी, इंसान क्यों नौकरी करता है, क्योंकि वो अपना जीवन को अच्छा से व्यतीत कर सके, हर महीना उसका जो घर, क्योंकि वो पूरा फैमिली जो है, वो जो जितना मेरे स्टाफ है सब इस पे ही डिपेंडेंट है, वो कोई दूसरा नौकरी नहीं करता, दे आर अ फुल टाइमर। अभी उन पर भी ये परिश्रम था, क्योंकि बहुत लोग ने छोड़ दिया, 11 महीना 10 महीना 12 महीना काम नहीं, पैसा नहीं मिलेगा, कौन खींच पाएगा, विदाउट मनी कोई भी काम तो नहीं होता है। दूसरा बात है, इतने बच्चे को हम लोग छोड़ भी नहीं पा रहे हैं, क्योंकि उनका भविष्य लेकर हम लोग बैठे हैं। एज अ प्रोजेक्ट डायरेक्टर ये पूरा हेडेक कम्युनिटी बेस्ड प्रोजेक्ट डायरेक्टर का ऊपर ही है, स्टाफ छोड़ के चले जा सकते हैं, घर वाला निकाल दे सकता है मालिक, ठीक है, इलेक्ट्रिक बिल काट दिया सकता है, पर आप बच्चे को जब रख रहे हो, उसका बेसिक जो खाना पीना है वो भी आपको रोज करना पड़ रहा है। 10-5 ऑफिस में क्या होता है, 10-6 ऑफिस में वो आप जाते हो आते हो, पर ये तो 24 आवर्स से खुला होम है, जिस पर सुबह शाम नाश्ता खाना, उसके साथ उनका मेडिकल इश्यूज, उसको ट्रांसपोर्ट के लिए पैसा देना, उसका ट्रेनिंग में पैसा देना, कोई ट्रेनिंग आपको क्यों फ्री कराएगा, तो ये पूरा हेडेक पर डे इज अ बर्निंग कॉजेज जो लगा रहता है, जहाँ पे मैंने हजारों मेल दिया, हजारों मेल, एंड वी आर अ वेरी रूट बेस्ड पीपल, हम लोग कैसे खींचे। तो उसके चलते क्या हुआ, जो जो काम हमें नहीं आने का बात है, बहुत सारे बच्चे यहाँ से निकल गए, दे आर बिकम अ डिमोटिवेटेड, दे बिकम अ सेक्स वर्कर, क्योंकि उन्हें पता है यहाँ पे सिर्फ सरकार खेलने के लिए ये सब सिस्टम बनाया है, ठीक है, हमने उनको बोला आप लोग रहो, नहीं क्यों रहे यहाँ पे, तो खाना ठीक से नहीं रहेगा, उनका मेडिसिन ठीक से नहीं रहेगा, उनका पर डे जो जो मिलना चाहिए वो नहीं रहेगा, दे बिकम डिमोटिवेटेड। और सबसे बड़ा है, मैं आई एम द एज ऑफ नियर अबाउट 45-46, ये मेरा मिडिल एज जो क्राइसिस है वो और भी बढ़ जा रहा है, क्योंकि एक तो मेरा माँ बाप का जो पैसा थोड़ा सा मेरे पास था उसको भी मैंने बहुत सारे कन्वर्ट कर दिया, उसको मैंने ये सब चीज के लिए हाई इंटरेस्ट में लिया हुआ है, अभी भी हमें नहीं पता सरकार कैसे हमें पैसा देगा, मार्च फाइनल आने वाला है, सामने महीना मार्च है, उसमें भी एग्रीमेंट का खिलाफ होने किया, हम लोग उसके लिए आवाज भी नहीं उठा पा रहे। और दूसरा है, जो मैं अपना जो दवाई है मेरा शुगर मेरा मिनिमम, उसको भी मैं खरीद नहीं पा रही हूँ, क्योंकि मुझे पर डे मेरा बच्चे लोग को अच्छा रखना है, क्योंकि मैं इनकी जिम्मेदारी लिया हूँ। और इससे क्या होता है, मैं सरकार से भी ठीक बोलचाल नहीं कर पा रहा हूँ, एज अ कम्युनिटी वाइज उनके पास भी मेरा सम्मान घट रहा है, ठीक है ना। तो ये बहुत ही मैंने एक मेंटल हेल्थ इश्यू मेरा बन गया है, मानसिक स्वास्थ्य मेरा बिगड़ गया है। मैं खुद अभी खाना पीना छोड़कर मैं बैठ रहती हूँ, जो एक एक दिन बीते मेरा कोई भी एंटरटेनमेंट नहीं है, मैं किसी के घर नहीं जा पा रही हूँ, बेसिक ऐसा नहीं कारण मैं घर से निकल नहीं पा रही हूँ, सिर्फ 24 आवर्स सब स्टाफ छोड़ के चले गए हैं, मुझे वो सब काम भी करना पड़ रहा है जो सब स्टाफ का करना चाहिए था। तो इससे क्या है, जो एज अ कम्युनिटी लीडर एक्टिविस्ट इतना सालों से मेरा काम रहा, आप यदि गूगल्स में भी देखो तो ये सब इस पे असर हो रहा है।
After reaching out to the government authorities several times with no response, Ranjita approached the National Council for Transgender Persons. They organized a meeting in Delhi to discuss matters with people from the ministry, but no one showed up.
जो हमारा भारत में जो काउंसिल है, जो नेशनल काउंसिल ट्रांसजेंडर का है, लक्ष्मी नारायण त्रिपाठी जी हैं ये लोग, उनको लेकर भी हम लोग ने एक नेशनल, आई एम ऑल्सो द मेंबर ऑफ एनएनटीपी, एनएनटीपी इज द फर्स्ट नेशनल नेटवर्क ऑफ ट्रांसजेंडर, जो हम लोग कुछ दिन पहले दिल्ली में उनका मीटिंग किया, मैं काउंसिल को बोला जो ट्रांसजेंडर का काउंसिल है, उन्हें बुलाया गया मिनिस्ट्री को, वो लोग आए नहीं, सुने ही नहीं, उनके लिए ब्रनिंग पॉइंट नहीं है, तो वो किनको सुनेगा? यदि आपने जो काउंसिल बनाया, सरकार का काउंसिल है, जैसा वुमेन्स कमीशन होता है वैसा एक काउंसिल बनाया, वो काउंसिल का मेंबर का भी कोई इज्जत नहीं है।
व्हाटएवर अदर बॉटलनेक्स वी आर एक्सपीरियंसिंग इन टर्म्स ऑफ इम्प्लीमेंटेशन और इवन हाउ मच बजट इज बीइंग एलोकेटेड और व्हाटएवर इज हैपनिंग, डू यू थिंक इट इज यू नो जस्ट दैट दिस इज अ वेरी न्यू थिंग एंड इट हैज टू बी गिवन टाइम एंड यू नो देयर विल बी एक्सपेरिमेंटेशन, देयर विल बी मिस्टेक्स, you know, like what the reality is that generally we do live in a transphobic society, and you know, and is it kind of like more of like politics behind sort of trying to, you know, look inclusive of all sections, basically because, you know, everyone's a voter.
I think that as I said in the past as well, I think that the government has the right intention at this point of time, and I have genuinely failed that while speaking to different individuals in the government, be it government of West Bengal, be it different other state government, and be it government of India. Right? Yes, they may not understand the way we understand it, or a trans person understand it, because we are the one who work directly with the community. But then there's a general sense of empathy is there towards a trans population, as if that they have accepted the fact that yes, these people live in our society and they are living in a horrible situation, and we have to do something better for them. That sense is there now, and that is there within the government. But then now from here we can go in two directions, right? We can actually do much more introspection, we can actually do much more rigorous research, policy work, and then include trans people, and not just trans person. I think, I mean, it's about the entire spectrum of gender and sexuality. We should be including all of us within this policy framework. And while drafting a policy, we must also understand how one particular policy, even if it is not directly related to trans or queer population, but how it might have an impact on trans and queer population. For example, the education policy, right? It is not directly related to trans and queer population, but then how it is going to affect the trans and queer population, how it is going to affect the society, and whether the education policy can make a better homo-normative, homo-accepting, trans-accepting society, or would make a more transphobic, homophobic society. That is something that the government has to think at this point of time. It is not just the responsibility of one particular ministry or one particular minister. It is the collective responsibility of the government to work on that. But then from here, the one way is this, and the other way can also be, it's like becoming a superficial thing at this point of time. Right? No such thing is happening. Government is only talking about superficial stuff, blah, 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 right? So this is something I'm a little bit worried about at this point of time, where we are heading towards, right? Because this is a transition point that we have acknowledged the problem, solving the problem, when, how, blah, 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 all these questions would come next. And it is also the responsibility of the trans and queer activists, trans and queer NGOs to work with the government so that it doesn't go in a worse situation. It doesn't become a worse situation from where we are at this point of time, right? It will take time. Government is trying to figure out, and it's not just the government. Society is trying to figure out what to do with trans and larger LGBTQI population. And in some cases, the response are largely also good, positive, tolerant, you know, like that is happening. More research work has to be done. More data has to be provided to the government, because government works on data. They understand raw data, and that's it, right? And so, yeah, so that's what my answer is, that we do not know at this point of time where we are heading towards. We have the right intention. We acknowledge the problem. It can go, what I'm saying, that more research work, more policy work, more blah, blah, blah. But it can also go where what you are saying, that in like just because of politics of inclusiveness, that I have to show that I am an inclusive individual, the superficiality of this political correctness become the norm, right? And then no actual work is happening, which is worrisomely is the case for West Bengal, unfortunately. That, you know, like the right intention has been there, is there, but then no actual groundwork is happening. I would rather say that the government of India's plans are much more concrete, much more vibrant when it comes to transgender persons' empowerment and development. Government of West Bengal, I'm not too sure why they are not acting on what they actually really believe in. I also feel that it's a very cash-trapped state, like not much cash to spend on the welfare of different individuals. West Bengal is a very poor state, a poverty-ridden state. Government has a lot of people to also take care of. So the priority becomes them than the trans person. But I also feel that within that whatever scheme, for example, this Kanya Sri scheme or this scheme of our say this Lakhi Bhandar scheme, right? Can this not include trans population apart from the female, apart from other marginalized community? The answer is yes, it can, if the government has right intention.
Thank you for listening to this episode. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.